Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur. Episode 32, recorded Halloween, Monday, October 31st, 2011. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. And by Ford, featuring voice-activated sync app link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, so you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out in the 2012 Ford Fiesta at ford.com/technology. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. In fact, it's episode 32 from TWiT headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from South Florida. Yes, it's always a surprise where I am. And this week, I came south. I heard about the big storm on the northeast and had to get away. So very happy to be in a warmer climate. Although I have to say, I'm kind of sweating on the show. If you're listening, that won't be a big deal. If you're watching, that means that I apologize in advance as I get shinier and shinier.
Well, you know, that actually happens to me every time we do the show because I've got all these lights in front of me. It seems all nice and kind of dark and cool and everything, but it's actually really warm. It's
really hot.
Apparently, we lost our guest, although we're talking to Skype Lady now, if you just heard that. All right, well, we'll try to get him back on. But anyway, so you're in Florida.
Yes.
And was there was some big storm in the northeast? Oh, I mean, I know that it hit the New York sort of Boston area, but that was that also affected Toronto?
It didn't hit Toronto at all, really. Although, you know, you feel it in the air. It's starting to get colder. So I just decided at the last minute to come south. I didn't have any speaking events or any travel this week. So sort of a last minute trip. But it's easy to get me to go somewhere warm in the winter or fall months, Sarah. So and I like to surprise people on the show, Sarah, because I'm always, you know, moving around and mixing it up a little bit.
Absolutely. It's funny. It's like you think Amber's got a whole week off. She can just hang out, not have to go anywhere. But you decided to go cross country and actually into another country as well. But you're used to it. All right. Well, without further ado, let's introduce this week's guest. You know him already. He's a great friend of TWiT, Kevin Rose, co-founder and CEO of Milk. Kevin, are you also the CEO? Or are you just
Yes, I am.
Yeah, because I think I remember you saying at one point, after all of your experiences at Digg, you would always retain that CEO control in your next adventures and ventures.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like I've learned a lot over the last 6+ years, so it just makes sense at this point.
Absolutely. Well, tell us welcome. A little bit about... Yeah, go ahead, Amber.
Oh, sorry. Just for people who don't know anything about Milk, I mean, I've been following along for a while, but for any of our listeners, tell us a little bit about it and what it's, you know, how you started it and why.
Sure. So essentially, you know, I've been doing Digg for about 6 or so years and left Digg and was going to focus on angel investing full time. And then I had a couple of weird things come together at once. I always had little side projects and little ideas that I wanted to work on and build out. And then so I was working with a team of people, just like 2 or 3 people to build out some prototypes, some ideas. And then my old creative director, Daniel Burka, was leaving his job and was going to join back up with me to start something new. And so there was a handful of us, like 6 of us at the time. And we said, hey, let's all get together and form a company. And so we decided to create a little incubator of our own ideas. So just knock out 2 to 3 projects per year, some cool things that we think should exist in the world. And we raised a little bit of money, and now we have a team in San Francisco that's doing just that.
It seems like having that kind of company incubator is a trend I'm seeing more of. We had Steve Jang from Schematic Labs on the Social Hour sometime back, and obviously they make the sound tracking app. And it was interesting to talk to him about, well, what else is Schematic Labs doing? And he said, well, right now we're really focusing on sound tracking, but obviously we have the power to do whatever we want because that's just the parent company. So right. Milk, I assume, is the same way, where right now, Oink is your new upcoming app, which should be live in the App Store shortly, momentarily, really. But you can work on whatever you feel like working on.
Yeah, I mean, for us, we just, when you're getting a team together to build something for the first time, and there's always a little bit of ramping up and seeing how everyone gels together, and you know, you're just working together and learning how all the different dynamics play out between people. And so for us, we wanted to focus on one project. We've got a couple of other ideas of things that we want to build. But right now we're just getting ready to launch our first big baby that we've been working on for the last, you know, 4 or 5 months. And so we're going to launch that, see how, you know, if it's gaining traction, if there's any bugs that we need to fix, like features we want to add. And then once everything starts to calm down a little bit, we'll probably pick another project to start working on.
Okay, so this is Oink, and for anyone who has been following a lot of the press that Oink's been getting lately, because you demoed it at it was Web 2.0 last week, mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago, yeah.
So, I mean, what was the reaction? For anybody who's not familiar, it's kind of I think some people will call it a Foursquare competitor, but I kind of see it more as a Yelp competitor because people are rating things that they like.
Yeah, I mean, for us, really, what we wanted to build out here is that I believe there's a lot of services like Yelp and Foursquare and Google Maps and you name it that are really good at getting you to a location. You know, and I'm not slamming these services at all. I think they're really good at what they do. You know, they give me a quick way to evaluate whether there's a nice restaurant. But to actually get at what's good inside of a place, you know, sometimes need to read like multiple page reviews on, say, like a Yelp page. And so for us, we really wanted to create some structured data around the actual individual items. And so allowing people to go in and say that, you know, I enjoy Bar Jules, the restaurant in San Francisco, but what I really like is the burger that they have there, and being able to rate that up and share that with their friends. And then it's not just about ranking things inside of one place, but it's also about those things to be compared against like similar things within cities or within a certain mile radius. So for example, right now, you know, I'm drinking an Olay coffee from Ritual Roasters that we just got an hour ago. So how does this rank inside of Ritual, but also how does this compare to all other Olay coffees in San Francisco? And if I walk, you know, two blocks that way, might I try like the third highest ranked one versus this one may be ranked number, you know, 27 or something like that. So really allowing people to make buying decisions and just find the best stuff.
So even though the app is about actually rating different things, a big part of it clearly is about the community that's there. And what lessons do you think that you learned from Dig in terms of building a community from the ground up?
Yeah, I think for us, we wanted to make sure that everything, when we built this app, that it was completely freeform from a taxonomy standpoint. So we have no idea what people are going to be ranking, and we don't want to force people into one bucket and just say it's all about food. I mean, food is something that you encounter a few times per day. So it's obviously something people are going to rate food and drink. But we wanted to keep it completely open-ended so that people are ranking, you know, roller coasters and all kinds of things. And then just see what the community does with it. So taking their feedback from day one. So once we roll this out, we're going to do it kind of invite-only system initially, and we'll roll out to, you know, 10,000 people, 20,000 people, and then grow from there. But really taking our time not to just force features on anyone. We're just going to see, you know, which features are being used, which ones are not being used, and then just we have, you know, community support forums from day one where people can go in and suggest new features and rank and vote up their favorite features. So just, you know, using, we know that the community that, you know, surrounds this product is what's going to make or break us. So being there to support that and help build what they actually want, I think, is very important.
One of the things I really like about Oink, and I've been lucky enough to be one of your sort of early beta testers, which has been really fun. There was just a few of us to start with, and you've let quite a few more people in now. So the not only the community, but the data that you're collecting has grown a lot. But unlike Yelp, where sometimes someone's review of a restaurant, if it's really good or really bad, can be really helpful, I often read those reviews and think, well, I don't know this person, and they're really specific about certain stuff, and there's all these details, and I don't even know if I would like them in real life or really have anything in common with them. Oink is, you love something, you like something, you're ho-hum for something, or you don't like it. And you can either stop there, because really, our experiences most likely will fall into one of those four categories, or you can add a little comment or a mini review if it strikes you, but you're not really forced to.
Right. Yeah, we want to make it just as dead simple as possible. Like, I feel that asking someone to do a multi-page review or write a really long, lengthy review of someplace, like, you know, like you said, there is times when that's valuable, but for us, we wanted to enable people just to, like, push one button. So you say, like, I absolutely love this, and it's just a single click. and you're done. You don't have to do anything else. So just making it that simple is really important.
I'm guessing you worked pretty closely with Daniel on the actual user interface design, and he's amazing. He's so talented. What was it like designing for the mobile platform versus designing for the web? What kind of, you know, did you like it better, or was it just a different experience when you're working with him?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, because it was a total experience. You know, Daniel and I worked together on so many other projects with Pounce and Dig and you name it, and I think that you know, we're both used to this world where, you know, if you're working from the web and you want to change something, say you want to just like change the color of an icon, or you want to move something a little bit more this way, or a font's not adjusting properly, like CSS is like, it's a 2-minute change to like move something around or prototype something out. And so it's really a different world where, you know, sometimes to implement something in Objective-C and on the actual iPhone can take like a half day just to move things around, you know, and it's like, or to speed something up that's a little bit slow. It's just, it's a little bit of a slower process. And then also oftentimes, you know, you have these beautiful, you know, Retina display graphics that are up on your screen that, you know, Daniel's designing and they look amazing and you're like, wow, that's really going to work well. And then you shrink it down to this little tiny device in your hand and you're like, I can barely see this, or this doesn't like feel right, or my thumb gets in the way of this and I really wanted to read this. And it's like, it's just a different environment. And it's something that definitely took us a while to get used to.
I mean, isn't that why Milk is such, I mean, you're in such a great position, because as you said, Oink is something that you've put your heart and soul into, but you're experimenting, and if it doesn't work out, you'll change it. And if it's a success, you'll do something else. But it's not as if the company, you know, would die if Oink wasn't a hit. You can just sort of do whatever you want. The company isn't Oink, the company is Milk.
Right. Yeah. And that's the whole idea is that, you know, if you take a look at these startups that take a while for like natural organic traction to like really sink in, like sometimes, well, Twitter's a great example. Twitter, it took a year plus before anyone started taking them seriously, you know, and it takes Tumblr's an even better example. Tumblr, gosh, it was probably, I don't know, maybe you guys know, like 3 years before they started getting some serious traffic, you know. And so for us, we know that we believe that this will be a space, meaning that eventually, like, let's pretend that even just Oink doesn't work, it doesn't succeed. I believe in my heart that at some point somebody will get it right, meaning that I'll be able to walk into a restaurant and it will rank these things inside of this restaurant, right? I think that is a valuable product and that people could find value in that. Mm-hmm. So we think that we're the ones that can do that, but we don't know if that the timing is right. I mean, this may take off in 6 months, it may take off a year and a half, who knows? So we want the flexibility of saying, we can roll this out, see what happens, put it on the sidelines and let it continue to evolve and like make little tweaks and adjustments. But we can go off and build something else while we're waiting for this to really gain some traction. Or, you know, a year after the project, we have that flexibility, like you said, just to like kill it and shut it down and focus on whatever we're building next. So that was the whole idea behind setting up Milk, is that we could have that flexibility.
I have to ask about the name.
Because, I was going to ask the same
thing. Even though it, and I'm familiar with the name, and I know it's you know, been around for a while, I'm just curious where it came from and if there's any story behind it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we, gosh, this was one of the biggest hurdles for us in getting this product off the ground. Is we spent, gosh, Chris, how long did we spend? Like 2 months or something trying to come up with a name? A long time. We just it was tough. I mean, there's so many domains are taken, and you'll come up with like a great idea and you're like, wow, I want this. And in our head, you know, we had a mobile app and we also wanted this to be a web app. And so you kind of have to secure, you have to think, okay, is the, you know, iTunes store name, like, is the name of the app still available? Okay, it is. Great. Okay, now is the website available? It's not. All right. Well, how much money do they want for the domain? And so there's a lot of like false starts when you hear of a name that you may think is awesome, and then you go and try and acquire it. And it's like, you know, you call them up and they're like, yes, we want to sell this. And you're like, how much? And they're like, $150,000. And you're like, no, I'm not spending that much on the name. So we had narrowed it down to like two or three. And we finally got on the phone with the people that owned oink.com. And for a four, you know, character .com domain, it can sometimes be, you know, extremely pricey. And so, you know, we got lucky. This guy just, you know, wanted, I think, paid $25,000 for it or something like that. And even though that sounds like a lot of money, and think most startups nowadays are around the $50,000 mark to get a good, you know, domain name. And we secured it, and then we got the trademarks for it, and we got the app store name, and it just everything just kind of fell in line. But we wanted something fun and just lightweight and easy to spell and something that passes the bar test. Like if you're in a crowded bar, you can say it out loud and people won't say like, what is that? I don't quite understand. So,
well, and you also have this nice little snout icon when you want to oink snout. Something, you know, as a verb, you just press the little oink snout and you go from there. If I wanted to take a picture of you, it nicely loads that I'm at Twit Brick House Studios because it's pulling from what I assume the same location database that Foursquare does.
Yes.
And then add in, you know, what this is, oink on Twit. Twat. That's not what we are. Twit. Go ahead and add it. And error occurred. Wink is having some issues right now. Okay, well, we still are in beta, after all.
what kind of error did you get? Did you upgrade to 1.0?
Yes, I did yesterday. Wink is having some issues right now. The team is working hard to fix. It was a nice error message. It was even in pink. Which goes with the whole color theme. But yeah, I think I love this idea. It'll be really interesting to see how something so, you know, it's not about food, as you said, although food is a very easy thing to rate because people love or, you know, don't love things that they eat. But to be able to open it up into, I like this wine tour I took. I like these shoes that I bought. I like this music instructor that I spent an hour with. It's like you can rate anything, so the sky's the limit. At the same time, it'll be interesting to see how people react to something that, for now, we don't have services like this.
Yeah, I'm also really excited to see where we can take the recommendation side of things as well. So we hadn't mentioned yet is that you actually gain reputation like credit inside the system as you're oinking different things. So let's say, like, right now I'm, like, a level 4 wines. I've rated a bunch of different wines. Or a level, I think I'm level 5 in tea. So if I travel tomorrow to, say, Chicago, and I haven't been there in a long time, or I'm just not with Oink, and I'm walking around, and we can start to eventually geofence the best stuff. And so I what I mean by geofence is that we're setting up, like, a little perimeter around a location that we know has an awesome item in it. So let's say I like a oolong tea, and I've told Oink, you know, by rating different things, I'm a big fan of oolong tea. My phone can buzz. I can pull it down and say, hey, by the way, 2 blocks away or 1 block away is the number 1 or number 2 rated oolong tea. You might want to check this out. So the idea of getting just some of the smarts in the back end so that we can make those recommendations, I think could be pretty powerful.
I just have one last question, Kevin. Just curious with Oink, long-term, how you plan to make money from it. Will there be ads or another revenue model?
Yeah, I definitely don't want to do the ads thing ever again. I think that's just, it's hard to build an ads business. It's just, it's a nightmare. But one of the things I did is I spent a lot of time working with business owners when we were developing this app and talking to them about exactly what they would like about this app and what they didn't like about it. And so, you know, one of the things that businesses have a really hard time with is connecting with their loyal customers. And so with Oink, we know, you know, what you're enjoying at a certain place. We know what you didn't like about a certain place. And so giving, I guess the best way to describe it is if you think of a way that Living Social or Groupon works today, they send out like a blanket, you know, discount to a restaurant, say, you know, 20-30% off a restaurant. And they really don't know who they're getting or who they're targeting. I mean, it's basically anyone in the service. So often, and so we give the businesses a way to actually communicate directly with the people that have been there before and have enjoyed something there or not enjoyed something. I think there's a lot of value there for the business owner. So that's kind of something that we're thinking about, and definitely there's some potential there to monetize.
Cool. Well, best of luck with Oink. I've had a lot of fun fooling around with it so far. I tend to really mostly oink things about food because I'm passionate about things that taste really good. But yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what people end up oinking the most and who ends up rising to the top as the gurus in the particular section. Although I don't think anybody will ever beat you in the tea section because you'll see to that.
Thanks for coming on, Kevin.
Well, thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for coming on so much.
Yeah, thanks. And next time I promise to hardwire. Next
yeah,
time.
You should. You should really do that. That would be great. All right. Bye, Kev.
Hi. Thank you.
It's funny. He goes, who does that anymore? Ethernet cables. It's hard to believe, but it actually really works out well. When you're a guest on Twitch, although I'm not hardwired, so there you go. But we have a nice solid connection here. It's really fun to watch. Kevin has gone through so many projects. I mean, obviously, something like Dig was a years long project that was very successful and had many iterations. And he's moved on to something else that he's obviously putting his work into. But I'm a real entrepreneur at heart, and. Yeah. You know, it's true that the stuff that you learned, you take with you, and they have a very different product now. But then again, you guys were talking about Daniel, and that refers to Daniel Berker, who's also the co-founder of Milk, who's an amazing designer and running that side of the business. They knew each other from, did they actually meet through you, Amber, initially?
No, I think that they had known each other before. But the weird thing is that Daniel Berker and I are both from Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, which is really small.
Yeah.
So I think that's where there's, it's just a, I've known him, and he was part of a company called Silver Orange that a few guys on PEI still run. And they really stood out as far as the design work that came out of there, and Daniel being one of the leaders in that space. So just happy to see him on board doing this, because he is so, so, so talented. And I know they work well together. So it's fun to watch their careers and see how they're doing in all the new projects. I'm sure this isn't the last one, Sarah.
Absolutely.
There'll be many more.
Yeah, absolutely agree. So for anybody who is watching that, we'll do our best to edit that out in the post show, but a little bit of an internet connection snafu there during the interview, but you got the gist of it. If you're excited about Oink, it's iPhone, iOS rather, only, at least at first, although they know full well that there are other platforms and people who would be interested. So look for that to come. So quickly, before we get to our first sponsor, just want to go ahead and make sure that you know when we shoot our show live. Because when you watch live, then you can see all of the things that actually go wrong behind the scenes that we try to cover up later on. So we tape the show 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern on Mondays. And Amber is sometimes in Toronto and sometimes other places. This week she's in Florida. You never really know with her. But it's always fun. It's really fun to be able to watch you chatting in live time. I'm pointing to the chat room window that I'm looking at right now. But if you can't watch us live, that's okay. Too, you can always go to twit.tv/TSH. That's our show page where all of our archives live, embedded videos. You can get, you can get embed links. You can share on Google Plus and Facebook and Twitter. You can comment on particular episodes or just get the feed links so that you can watch our show every week without even having to go and remember to press anything. It will just download automatically. You guys know how feeds work. Video and audio feeds. If you're an audio person, you don't get to see some of our video, but you get the gist of it. And if you're a commuter or you like to listen to us at the gym or anything else like that, we try to make it as easy as possible for you to consume the show. All right, let's thank Netflix for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. If you're a Netflix user, you know how great it is to watch instant streaming movies, TV shows, TV series that you need to catch up on. My mom was very tired of hearing me talking about how much I loved Breaking Bad. So she's glad she went, all right. Not all, the fourth season just ended, but the first three seasons were released on Netflix instant streaming, sometimes back. She's a Netflix subscriber. So she said, let's see what all the fuss is about. So she got through season one and went, I don't know. And I said, Mom, you got to stay with it. It's going to get better. She got through season two. And then I think she got through season three in like a day. I mean, she just got, one episode after the next, because that's what the show does to you. So it was really easy for her to catch up quickly. And then we could talk about it and go, oh, yeah, wasn't that episode great? So it's really fun, especially in those situations where you just want to consume a lot of content. And you don't want to be, you have to wait every Sunday to watch the show. And you can watch it through Netflix. And very especially good for series that you need to catch up on, but also movies. Old movies, new releases, all sorts of stuff available on Netflix. Which is, what's really cool about it, too, is that not only can you watch at home via, your Netflix app on your laptop while you're sitting in your living room, or your Netflix widget on your TV, or through your Roku box, your Apple TV, or your Xbox, you can watch it on your iPad. And so you can be on the go and be watching a movie, TV show, and have to stop for whatever reason, come back, and when you're ready to watch it again, Netflix will remember where you left off, even if you change the platform that you watch Netflix through. It's really cool. I love Netflix. I don't know how I could live without it. So here's the deal. If for some reason you're not a member or you know somebody who isn't, you can get 30 days free. Think of all the Breaking Bad you could watch in 30 days if you haven't started that series yet. Just go to netflix.com/twit, and we will hook you up. Free registration at the end of 30 days. You do whatever you like, but you get those 30 days free. Consume as much content as you want. And thank you to Netflix for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right, moving on some of the stories around the web. Amber, what do we got?
Well, probably one of the biggest stories that I've been keeping an eye on that took place over the past week was this new social network launching called Unthink. And it was getting a ton of buzz. I actually just signed up for an account, and I did get a promo code to get into the account, and I've been trying to get in, and for some reason it's not working for me personally. So unfortunately, I haven't been browsing it. But basically, they're sort of like an anti-Facebook. The concept being that this is a social network where you don't have to worry about them selling your information without you being part of that process. And so it's a place where there could be a community that maybe is less focused on sort of the corporate side of things and selling your information. So haven't heard much about users on it, have heard a lot about it in the press. What about you, Sarah?
Well, okay, so I also got a promo code and I was able to get into Unthink, although it did have some major hiccups the first day that I know TechCrunch had written about it. The site got hammered and I thought, well, they're going to be a Facebook competitor. They're really going to need to make sure a lot of people can log in simultaneously. Chad, if you want to take my screen, this is what my, I guess you would call it, my main dashboard on Unthink looks like. Doesn't look a lot like Facebook. Doesn't really look a lot like anything social network-y that I can compare it to. Here's my profile here. I'm a new user as well, so I haven't updated a lot of stuff. Although what I did notice off of the bat was when I had created my account, and then Unthink says, okay, so let's find some of your friends. You can look for your friends via your computer's Gmail contacts, for example. But it doesn't have things like Facebook Connect or Twitter Connect, that sort of stuff. And you say, well, duh, why would it? But that's actually an issue for me because that's where I can populate so many of my other services.
Of course,
there's a service called Batch that we're going to talk about in a few minutes that was very easy to set up because everyone who was using it that I'm also connected to on Facebook was, that was instantaneous. On Unthink, what I could do was use Gmail as contacts or my contacts just on my computer. I don't really manage contacts on my computer very well. My Gmail contacts are an absolute mess because those sometimes include people that you wrote back to once and you don't even know that well.
Yeah.
Or even emails that were inadvertently sent to me type of thing. So I started manually typing in some friends' names. I couldn't find anybody except Tom and Iaz, which I knew were on Unthink because we talked about the social network on TNT a couple of weeks ago. So already I think, well, wait a second. If it's that hard to find people on the social network, how could they possibly expect massive adoption?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's one of those things that I personally wouldn't want to come into the market and compete with anyone like Facebook. I might, if you're launching a social network, I think the only way it could work is for it to be a real niche-oriented social network, something that is a very specific audience, but this is so broad, and like you said, not an easy way to capture all of your friends. So a lot of buzz, but I'm not sure if it's going to stand up over time. So we'll keep an eye on it, Sarah. I emailed them to come on the show, so hopefully they'll come on and explain themselves.
Yeah, that would be really cool because it's I agree with you. It's like this is such a tough market to try to go head to head with Facebook or even Twitter or LinkedIn. I know that they've got facets of each in this social network. I mean, that's not to say that no one should try. I mean, that would be the worst thing ever, right? You can never compete with Facebook, so don't even try. It's just a very tough thing to do. And I know that the founder, her story is kind of funny where she had a situation where her son wanted to join Facebook because all of his friends were on Facebook and he would feel like a social pariah if he didn't get on board, almost like, the cool Nikes type of a thing. And she thought, this sucks. This is not the kind of situation I want. I want to build my own social network where, yes, as you mentioned, the advertising rules and the privacy rules are just much different. It's a it's the kind of social network I would want my kid on. That's, I mean, that's a great reason to go through the effort, but how many people is that going to apply to? So
yeah,
we'll have to take a look as Unthink continues to unfold. And definitely, if we can get them on the show, that'd be great. Cause they could
it would be great to have them. Now, Sarah, you had a link that you put in here about Vimeo launching a music store. And at first, I didn't really understand what this was about. And I just had clicked on the link earlier today, and this is really cool.
Yeah, it is. So Vimeo, of course, is a video sharing social network. Not only can, if Amber and I were to, I don't know, create some sort of funny video or an educational video or whatever, anything that you can record. It's very much like YouTube as far as being able to upload any content that you want via your account. But Vimeo has always felt different than YouTube. A lot more musicians and artists seem to use it. They've got it's a different kind of a community, a little bit more specific, I guess, although, of course, anybody can be part of Vimeo. And they've got a variety of different accounts. So you can have a free account, you can have a pro account where you could embed something that you uploaded to Vimeo in HD, unlimited places type of a thing. It's a great service. I've been a Vimeo user for years. Well, Vimeo realized, and this is something that the YouTube folks have also realized, is as people have more editing tools that allow them to create semi-professional looking videos, creations, music videos, that sort of thing, there's still some missing elements. So, I might get a Canon 5D and take some beautiful pictures, but what about the music element of it? Am I a musician? Certainly not. I've got some tools. Certainly on my iPad, I've got GarageBand, and I can play around with this stuff, but it's very time consuming, and yeah, I'm not very good at it. When you can't rip off anybody else's music, because then you can't post stuff like that on sites like Vimeo or YouTube, because that's a copyright issue. So what Vimeo decided to do was put together a music store where you can choose to either buy for low price, I mean, it looks like $2 for a personal license of a variety of songs. Now, some of the songs are free because they are labeled as Creative Commons. So these are artists who have said, as long as it's not for commercial purposes, I don't care if you use this, I don't need any money. Other artists would be getting, obviously, a portion of the money, and I'm sure Vimeo is taking some sort of a cut. I'm not sure exactly what it is. But if I went ahead and decided to play, we've got Modern Prison Traditional Playing, and it's listed under World Miscellaneous and African. This is $2 for a personal license, so let's listen and see if it's the kind of music that I want for my next metropolis. Okay, wow. So either that's either going to be like, yes, that's exactly what I wanted. Or maybe it'd be like, I'm looking for something different. So what you can do is you can just search through the music store, or you can search by genres. And that's obviously very helpful, because if you have a particular genre or idea in mind, the music can kind of help get you there. Or maybe your project is completely done and you just need to slap some music over the top of it. So I love this idea. I think it's a long time in the making, really, and kudos to Vimeo for realizing that this will help a lot of their very creative community users take to the next level.
Yeah, that's very cool. It's so nice to see that. I mean, there have been places online for a while where you can get music, but it's nice to see it in one central place. Plus, especially like you said with Vimeo, because there are so many artists and filmmakers there and people doing really cool work. So, Sarah, this next headline is kind of interesting. Social networks affect your brain like falling in love. So that's a good thing for us, I suppose, being the Social Hour and all.
Yeah, absolutely. This headline grabbed me. It was a Fast Company article that is actually, I really recommend reading it if this kind of subject appeals to you, because it's almost too much to explain in just a few minutes on the show. But I'll try. The short version is there's a neuroeconomist, which is a funny term. I'm still getting used to it, named Paul Zak, who has been working on figuring out how oxytocin, which is it's a chemical in our brains, that's associated with happiness and love and that sort of thing, being kind to other people, how that plays into the way that people connect to each other online via social networks. You know, if you have a lot of friends on Facebook, some of us say, why would anybody want, you know, 3,500 friends on Facebook? You don't know that many people. Well, maybe for that particular person, and of course everybody's different because our brains are different, maybe there's an oxytocin element of that where they just feel happy. This is something that makes them feel like they're connecting with their peers. There are many studies, scientific studies, that, you know, married people live longer, you know, or if you're lonely, you know, you might have a depleted immune system. So there's kind of a mental and physiological link between connecting and friendships and the opposite. So the author of this article, Adam Pennenberg, went through, you know, he took some MRIs where they would show him, you know, videos that were very sad or videos that made him feel kind of warm and fuzzy, you know, kitten videos type of thing. And they would watch in real time the way that his brain was reacting. And then they would give him tests, almost like a virtual currency test, like if somebody needed to borrow money type of a thing, and you have $10 and you still want to buy lunch, how much would you give them? And it would depend on, you know, which video he had just watched, you know, and how his mood was at the time. So the implications of this are really exciting on one hand, because you go, okay, so this whole internet thing isn't just a big waste of time. You know, we're trying to be happy here. But then on the other side, you know, what if advertising companies can tap into this to a point where we're manipulated into buying things because we're kind of on a friendly high type of a thing? So it's a complex, it's a very complex subject, but it was really fascinating.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one to read, especially to send people who think that social networks are a waste of time. At least once a week, I talk to a couple of people who are always saying that, you know, why would I be on Twitter? Why would I use Facebook? And I'll always get those people who kind of doubt that social networks are any good. So this is fun. Also, Adam Pennenberg, I believe he wrote a book called The Viral Loop. He's an author, and he does a lot of amazing work. And I had a chance to see him speak, and it's neat to see him attached to this study. But I say send this link to everybody out there who says you're wasting your time on social networks.
Exactly.
That's all you need to do. Because it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty hearty article. And like you said, yeah, difficult to explain in total on the show, but definitely worth a read.
Oh, oxytocin. Thank you, chat room. See, I think the word looks so much like oxycontin to me, that oxytocin. Very good. That's the brain, not oxytocin. Oxytocin.
That's why we have chat rooms. It's all good.
It's our hive mind. We can't do it alone.
All right. So for our social tip this week, Sarah, when I found this, I was thinking about you. I don't want to say that you love Chrome extensions. Maybe that language is too strong, but maybe not after we saw the most recent article. So this is kind of fun. It's a Chrome extension that allows you to watch videos on Facebook while you're browsing through your news feed. So if you come across, let's say Sarah posts a video on the page, I can, using this Chrome extension, I can let that video play in the top right while I continue to browse through my Facebook feed. So it's a really, really simple thing. But I think it's useful for a lot of people, especially with the number of people watching Facebook videos on a regular basis.
Absolutely. Okay, so I'm looking at Facebook right now, and I see Scott Beal, who's Laughing Squid, has embedded this video here. Now, normally, I would play this video. It would get a little bit bigger, but then as I scrolled, it would scroll away. So let's say, all right, I've installed this Chrome extension. Aha! Now, what we have here is the video playing on the right-hand side, while my full Facebook feed keeps scrolling. See, that's great. Now, I don't know about you, Amber. I don't click on everything that everybody's,
look, lady, I just,
you know,
came
linking.
In for pick me up.
Now, see, okay, let's see if I go to a different video. Ooh, I see. So it's not just one video at a time either. I can go kind of nuts here on my.
Don't get too carried away, Sarah.
Yeah, really. I love this stuff. I just love it. Good.
Sarah's definitely high on the social networks. It's all good.
I am. Oxytocin just flowing through me right now.
Flowing.
This is nice, though. It's if there was a video that you knew was going to take more than about 5 seconds, you wanted to watch it, but you wanted to multitask, it's the perfect little extension.
Oh, it's perfect. And I think what I loved about this, I've mentioned this stat on the show before, but Facebook is currently, as far as video viewing, a top five video destination on the web. So we know so many people are consuming video content on Facebook. So to be able to do that and multitask, I think it just makes a lot of sense. Because sometimes I go into my newsfeed and I want to go there because I want to see what people are posting. And to click on a video, I'm really impatient, Sarah. I don't know about you, but if it's not interesting in the first 10 seconds, I just click away. So now that I know I can kind of load it up and let it play, I might invest a little more time. We'll see.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's good stuff. Obviously, just for Chrome, if anyone knows of anything for Firefox, Safari, etc., that works anything like this Chrome extension, let us know. But usually Chrome has the best extensions. I mean, it's my browser of choice, so I've got all sorts of extensions installed. But, of course, there are a lot of Firefox ones as well. I was going to talk about Batch on the show, Amber, and I think maybe we'll save that for next week because I definitely want to get to our viewer feedback.
Oh, sure. Good idea.
So our first email came from Chris, who says, "Hey, Amber and Sarah, I was listening to last Monday's show, and I heard an email about how they were using social media to connect with other people who had or knew about the same condition." So I think this was actually a few weeks ago. "My mom has multiple sclerosis, and she connects with other people with MS or who know about it through the social network shift.ms. She uses this not only to talk about her condition, but also to take her mind off of it and have discussions about things that don't even remotely link to MS, but she has the connection with these people through MS. I think it's a pretty neat use of social media to connect people with the same condition. I had no idea there was something called Shift MS. Let's look."
Yeah, it's so interesting, you know, and that's where I sort of touched on it, but those communities that are sort of niche-oriented, you know, and you hear a lot about this, I think, with people who are suffering through certain things. There's a big social network for people who are undergoing cancer treatments, for instance, mm-hmm. and just a fantastic idea, not just to connect and, I think, feel part of something, but to, you know, communicate with other people, but also as a resource for educational and material if you have some type of disease and you're looking for help or, you know, it's just fantastic to see these communities really spawn online.
This is a neat little site. It's having kind of a hard time loading right now. I hope it's not anything to do with us. But the people can post videos I like the idea that you may have something in common, but that's just one thing that you might have in common. I mean, you might really, really connect about something else. This is just, it's kind of an entry, a way to say, well, we both have this pretty major thing in common. Now let's see if we can be friends beyond that. So thank you very much to Chris for the email, shift.ms. If you know anybody who suffers from MS, this might be a really great resource for them if they don't already know about it.
All right. We also have an email from Mark, and he said he had just finished watching episode 31, where we talked about a new company called Reporter. He says he thinks it's an interesting idea, which in an ideal world would supply news organizations with more accurate and timely information. He says he found himself next to breaking news, or if he found himself next to breaking news, he'd be tempted to snap a few videos and make some money. But, he says, what happens when it moves to entertainment news and turns every Yahoo with a smartphone into paparazzi? And then he puts in brackets, or raparazzi. Pretty funny. I'm not sure it'll survive the onslaughts of lawsuits from people with smash phones and blackened eyes. Interesting feedback. I think it's a situation right now, if there are celebrities around and people who are taking photos, that just happens anyway. You don't need an app like this. So I'm not sure that this will make things any worse for celebrities. I think they probably have it pretty bad right now with technology.
Yeah, it's a good point that he makes, where if there's a financial incentive, even if it's not much. I mean, I think that when we talked about Reporter, it was the example that we showed was somebody making, you know, $75 for, you know, to take some video of a fire for the news station. Well, if you really want that money, you know, you end up doing something inappropriate and getting yourself in some hot water. Yeah, where does the liability lie there? I can see there potentially being some issues. Although I still think that the concept is really cool.
It's definitely really cool.
Yeah. I wanted to, I wasn't sure if I was going to tell this story or not, but I think it's actually, we talked about soundtracking when we were talking to Kevin earlier, and I just have this somewhat bizarre story that I'll share with you guys. So the other day, I was taking a cab ride, and I was in a hurry, and, you know, I flagged down this cab, and I get in the cab, and he's blaring this, like, hard rock. It's like this, just this metal song that I've never heard before. I didn't think I have. And I was just like, ah, you know, he's driving like a maniac. And I just thought, well, this is a funny situation. I got to know what the song is. So I went up and loaded up Soundtracking, where you can, it's one of many services where you can do this, but you know, you hold up your phone and it takes in the music content and tries to figure out what you're listening to. And it turned out being a song by Motorhead. So I tweeted it out, the Soundtracking. And the thing is, Soundtracking is obviously now working with artists to, when I tweet out that I'm listening to Motorhead, if Motorhead has an official band account type of a thing, it will tweet out that I'm listening to them and I reply them. So the idea is to get musicians and bands and artists, you know, more of like a two-way conversation so that they can be like, oh, cool, this woman was listening to this song of mine. Well, so that was fine. And then somebody from Motorhead emailed me via my About Me page and said something like, oh gosh, I have to read this verbatim because it's very silly.
Was it? That is hilarious. I can understand the cab situation, Sarah. I should be using that when I get into cabs and they're blaring music because it's a regular occurrence.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can't find the email. I thought I had it up, but it basically said, hey, so you said that you were listening to this song. You should follow us on Twitter. So I went, oh, okay. Well, let's go to Twitter and look at the account. And they were following zero people. Zero. Not one, not two, not nobody in the band, no manager, no nothing. And they had like 5,000 followers or whatever. So I wrote back and said, you're not following anybody. This is very, it's too one-sided for me. goodbye or something, I just being lighthearted about it, never heard anything back. So I thought, well, you know, this is a very good idea on Soundtracking's part to at least get the ball rolling. But in this case, I still feel like the band was sort of missing the point.
So lame. Sarah, I cannot tell you how many people I know who work in the television industry, whether it's in news, and who have jumped on Twitter, who have pretty big followings, people who I know who work for the same news organization that I work for, who don't follow anyone. And literally, it's, you know, uncomfortable for me because I kind of know them and I want to say, you know what, this is super, super lame that you don't follow anyone. But there are still people who don't understand that. They think it's all about them and just amassing followers. It's just amazing that, you know, there isn't that more interest and just and more curiosity about using a tool to gather information from different sources. So that's not a big surprise, but yeah, definitely.
It's weird. It's like, what happens when you log into Twitter? You just have absolutely nothing in your feed. You have
super
to go
lame.
To your at replies to even see any action. It just
weird.
It would be such a weird way to experience Twitter. I don't get
lame.
It either.
Lame.
So lame.
All right. So we love getting your feedback. If you want to email us, all you have to do is write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can also leave us a voicemail at 2626social, or even better, record a short video, 30 seconds or less, and you can send us the link. And we love getting your feedback. So, you know, this is an interesting topic, sort of social media mistakes, and it sounds like that band made some. So maybe if you've seen social media mistakes that we haven't read about, you could share them with us, and we will make sure to set those people right.
Absolutely. All right, Amber, get ready for your rad or fad. Well, I take a moment to thank Ford. Ford is like the techiest automotive entity ever. You might have heard of us talking about Ford.com/technology on Twitch shows as of late. And we're doing it because they've got all sorts of cool stuff. So here's the deal. Ford is sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour because they want to tell you about their available voice-activated sync app link. If you're not familiar with it, it lets you select and control apps from your smartphone with voice commands, which is obviously very helpful when you're talking about car stuff. Well, you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. So with AppLink, you can do things like voice control Pandora in your car. I love Pandora. I listen to Pandora religiously. I love the idea of not having to like thumbs up and thumbs down anything with my hands because I got to be driving. You can listen to your tweets. Something called Open Beak will read it back to you. Simple voice command. It's like a Siri type of a situation, but it's already in your car. It's not even
awesome.
It's not even anything. Yeah, it's all built in. Once your smartphone is linked to Pandora, for example, you could use voice commands to select your favorite radio station. You can say PlayStation. Classic rock. I mean, even if that's not already in your save Pandora stations, that sort of stuff. So it's very robot stuff. With Open Beak, you can say something like read timelines or read replies to go ahead and get caught up on Twitter. That's something that actually I could really use, because Twitter goes so quickly that sometimes when I get to work at Twit after an hour of being on the road, I really feel behind. I mean, a lot of things can happen in an hour. I would like to maybe periodically be catching up as I'm on the road, especially on big news days when I know that things are going to break. AppLink is available on select models and compatible with select smartphone platforms. Obviously, Ford wants to roll this out to as many folks as possible, but they want to do it smartly. But in the meantime, it's amazing stuff. If you're like, okay, this sounds good, but is it right for me? Go to Ford.com/technology. They have a lot of information there, a lot of details, what you get, which car models you can get it in, what it looks like, how it works. Really, really, they're really at the forefront of the next generation of driving. And I can't wait till one day I'm able to buy a new car so that I can experience stuff like this. I don't even have a jack in my car for an auxiliary connection, Amber, to listen to my iPhone, or, you know, the, like, iTunes podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Can you believe it?
Yeah.
I put my headphones in, and I just have my iPad next to me in the passenger seat. Works fine. Same idea, but a little cumbersome. So I'm a little behind, but Ford.com/technology is how you can see the future of how cars are all going to be one day. They're just first. Thanks to Ford for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We love them. And
they are awesome.
And now, I love this one, Amber, but I'll let you set this up.
Okay, this one is kind of confusing. So even though normally I would do sort of a product or a service and get you guys to decide if it was rad or fad, and Sarah and I would give you our feedback on that as well, this is a little bit different. So this is an article that was written on Mashable that I was reading about, and the title of the article is "Should the New Facebook Gestures Allow a Dislike Button?" So basically they were talking about Facebook's F8 conference in September and how it's possible now for developers to go in, and instead of people being restricted and only being able to like a page, you can now use a verb with any noun. So it could be kind of like you just watched a movie, or you just cooked a recipe, or hiked a trail. Now, I know from talking to friends of mine at Facebook that Facebook has clearly done this. So they allow brands to get more involved in the story and within people's timelines, and it just goes beyond the like. So I think that's kind of an interesting idea. But what is also kind of fascinating is that some developers thought this was kind of cool because they could go in and create basically like a dislike button. So if you didn't like someone, you could state that you disliked it. Now, Facebook restricts you from doing this because there are a few blocked words that they don't allow developers to use. So if you've stayed with me till now, that's a good thing, because it keeps going. So the interesting thing, and this is an editorial piece in Mashable, and at first I thought, that's really lame. Why is Facebook continuing to restrict people even further, you know, just limiting how much people can actually express themselves on the social network? But then after I read this, I kind of got it, and I understand, you know, Facebook is, they really are an advertising platform in many ways, right, Sarah? I mean, it's a place where companies can go and target certain audiences. So if all of a sudden Facebook makes it possible for anyone to just start disliking pages and things, then I think it causes a lot of problems for those brands who enjoy the experience. So it's a tough one. Does that make any sense?
It made perfect sense, and I'm familiar with this whole idea, and I think that it's, I don't know. I guess I'm sort of mixed on it. On one hand, I think that Facebook likes are really limiting. You know, if somebody posts something like "I'm having a terrible day," or you know, "my animal died," or something that's like very negative, it's like you want to support the person, but liking is sometimes weird, and that's just one example. I like the idea of being able for a brand to say, well, we don't want you to like it. We want you to whatever it, you know, in verb form. But then again, it starts making Facebook seem a little messy because there's not sort of a uniform way of giving accolades to something. I guess I'll have to wait and see how it rolls out, you know, the adoption rates and how people are using it. And I'm sure Facebook feels the same way. I mean, if it somehow gets out of control, then they have the right to change things back however they want, and we know that they do that sort of thing. But I don't know. I think in general, I mean, if I had to choose whether this is a rad idea or just a fad that won't work, I say rad just for the purposes of evolution.
Yeah, exactly. I think it, I'm going to agree with you, Sarah. I know you probably like more controversy if you're listening to the show, but I think with this one, I do have to agree with you. I think it's interesting, and I think it's come to the point where we have to move beyond the like. You know, it's just not enough. And I feel like this, not just with brands, but also it drives me crazy with nonprofits who or celebrities even who say, hey, if you like my page, I'll donate $1 to, you know, help earthquake victims in Turkey. And it's just like, donate the freaking dollar anyway, right? You know, it drives me, like, liking something is not necessarily like the strongest social action you can take or the strongest message you can send to someone. So I think it needs to get, I think it's just part of the evolving language on Facebook. So I think it's a good thing, but let's hope they don't restrict too much.
Yes, absolutely. So we're cautiously ratting it.
Yes. Don't let it go to your heads, though, Facebook. You know, don't go and just, you know, think you can limit anything. And but that's what we'll say for now. So interesting to watch. You know, it's hard, again, to keep up with all the changes at Facebook and explain them in everyday language.
It does give brands right now. There's nothing. Sometimes it's like it's almost sort of like I get a little pain in my heart when I see a brand. You know, I'll watch a commercial or something at the end. It's like us on Facebook. You know, that you see that sort of thing. And it's like, no one's going to like this on Facebook. I mean,
yeah.
It's just, it doesn't make any sense. There's no incentive for anybody to do that. But I might actually really be able to interact with this brand in some other way. They're just restricted. They can't even be creative about it because what are their options? So I like the idea of giving brands at least more leverage to be interesting. You know,
yeah, exactly.
And to do new things.
And my final note on this has nothing to do with Facebook, but it has to do with Google Plus. Where are the brand pages on Google Plus, Sarah? When are they coming?
I don't know. Well, they just recently let Google Apps accounts link up with Google Plus, which previously had not been allowed.
Ah, okay.
So you figure, I mean, my Google Apps account that I use the most often is just it's my saralane.com. That's just, I use that domain through Google Apps. So that's not really a brand, but I mean, think of all the brands that are using Google Apps. So it's like,
sure.
Technically, you're kind of halfway there already, but I don't believe that they've actually said, okay, it's brand time, because they've sort of got to build that infrastructure. But I don't know. I don't know why we heard about this so long ago that brands eventually would be included. We haven't really seen much.
It's taking a while. Anyway, we'll keep on that, Sarah.
We will.
And also, if you guys have any rad or fad segments, just let us know, because it doesn't have to be all about us. Right, Sarah?
That's right. Yes. We can't do it all. We need our hive mind. Help us help you. You know, you can, as Amber mentioned, always email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. We love your emails. Love getting your feedback. You have great stories. You turn us on to social networks and services that we would never have heard of otherwise. So that's all great. And thank you so much for all of your contribution. Keep them coming. All right, Amber, we are definitely at the end of our hour. I think we're pretty much in one solid hour by now. Thanks so much to everybody
Love
for
it.
Joining us. And thanks to you, Amber, for taking time out of your lovely vacation in Florida to talk to
yes.
us here.
Yes, it was great joining you. I'm, again, apologizing for being so sweaty, but...
I'm sweaty, honestly.
Okay, that's good.
Never know. You look sun-kissed and healthy.
Okay, perfect. All right, thanks so much for tuning in, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.